Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. Do you have a plumbing emergency? Call Four Seasons. An electrical emergency? Call Four Seasons. A heating or cooling emergency? Call Four Seasons. Same day hot water tank installation needed? Call Four Seasons. Need a whole home generator? Call Four Seasons. We guarantee same day installation on all heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. And no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Are you ready for your next winter adventure? Whether it's a stylish all-wheel drive SUV to get the family where they need to go, or an innovative EV to make the switch to electric, ChevyDriveChicago.com has you covered. With Equinox, Traverse, Silverado, Trax, and Trailblazer, you're sure to find the perfect Chevy to match your needs and lifestyle. But finding the right car is only part of the story. Winter weather is here, and your vehicle needs to be ready for anything. From oil changes and tire rotations to unexpected repairs, your local Chevy dealer is here to help. Their team of experts knows your vehicle, and they will make sure your car is safe, reliable, and ready to handle whatever the season brings. So why wait? Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today to find your local dealer, shop the latest vehicles, and schedule your service appointment. ChevyDriveChicago.com. That's ChevyDriveChicago.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long in studio at 5:45. Steve Geller will join us for our triple option feature. In the 4 o'clock hour, we'll have on with us at 4:20 Saints radio analyst Deuce McAllister. And Deuce will talk about the Saints, moves that they might make, and certainly his thoughts on Kellen Moore. 4:40, Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, also covers the Tennessee Titans. So we'll talk to Justin on where he feels the Titans may go, because they hold all the cards in their hands, so to speak, with the first overall pick. And where does he think maybe the Saints will be going at pick 9 and some of the other selections? At 5:20, the legendary Archie Manning will join us, talk about Kellen Moore and his time at Manning Passing Academy. He's got to know him from there. Kellen was there twice at Manning Passing Academy, so there's a connection there. Certainly Archie's thoughts on the Super Bowl and the ramifications of that. And at 6:25, Joe Healy, National College Baseball writer and SEC Extra on D1Baseball.com, and starting to feel the baseball heat everywhere you go now. Instead of a football question, I get, man, is Jay Johnson and LSU going to make it back and maybe play for the big marble, so to speak, in late June? Charlie, you're telling me the season goes all the way till late June, right?
Correct. So if you're looking at it, the College World Series Finals ends, I believe, the week of June 22nd. Yeah. It's like that weekend.
I'll take that.
No, it goes pretty deep, Mike. Now, the College World Series in itself is a couple-week event, so as long as they get there, it stretches out a little bit, too. So,
and but I'm sure people that host it, man, do they want LSU back? Man, their sales of, let's just say, beer, alcohol, food jumps up when they got LSU fans visiting in the area. But, man, again, I know we talk about this quite often, how loaded the SEC is this year. So much attention, not only on LSU, but also Arkansas, Texas A&M. Texas always going to be in the mix there. And there's always a surprise team. Let's see how Tennessee, after winning the national title, how well they can defend it. They've always recruited well. Georgia is another team that a lot of people feel will be there toward the end. So just like in football, you know, it's more competitive in baseball in the SEC than it is in football. It's unbelievable how this rage for college baseball has hit the SEC and the top players. That's where they want to go.
It's SEC gotten better. Schools. It's gotten better because of NIL and the transfer portal, that all these top players from, and we'll talk a little bit in a second about one of those top players that transferred to LSU because they released their weekend rotation, and one of them is a top-ranked transfer. But a lot of these transfers will go from different schools, and then they'll come down to the SEC if they're good enough to play. And Ben McDonald was on with us last night, Mike, and he was talking about how loaded the conference is once again, but LSU's right in that number. If you're looking at the preseason rankings from different outlets and then the coaches' polls and everything like that, LSU's top five consensus among teams like Texas A&M, who's basically number one consensus because all the talent that they have, but also like other teams like Arkansas is going to be really good. Georgia's going to be really good this year. You know, Texas with Jim Schlossnagel, we'll see how good they are.
I think Tennessee.
Tennessee is the same exact thing that, you know, you want your team to do in the SEC. When you lose a bunch of talent to the draft, and Tennessee lost a lot of talent last year, they just reloaded with Coach Vitello. We'll see how good they are this year. I don't think they're going to be as good as they were last season, but they're still going to be really talented as well. So, Mike, like you're mentioning, the SEC is going to be a gauntlet again this season. You know, there's a three-week stretch where LSU plays Tennessee, they play Texas A&M, and they play Arkansas. I don't think it's necessarily in that order, but, I mean, that's like... That's going to be...
Get a ticket for that one.
If you're penciling in early on, you know, the stretch where LSU is going to be tested this season, that's what I'm really, really looking forward to.
Also, tonight at 6:30, be Ella, Pelicans pregame as they play the Sacramento Kings, and tip-off at 7 o'clock with Todd Graffanini with the call right here on the Big 870 WWL. And at 7:30, it's LSU men's basketball as they play Arkansas. And a familiar guy on the bench for the Hall. Coach Cal. And yeah. Beating his old team.
And how about that?
Yeah, that was something. Charlie, you mentioned about the rotation. We're going to have Jay Johnson on tomorrow at 5:20. So just want to mention that also, too. WWL is the home here for Saints football. So tomorrow morning at 11:30, we're going to bring you the introductory press conference with new head coach and Super Bowl champion Kellen Moore. Also, Gail Benson is expected to talk, along with Executive Vice President, General Manager Mickey Loomis. So, hey, keep your dial tuned into the Big 870 WWL, and that starts tomorrow at 11:30, and we will give you the entire press conference right here on the Big 870 WWL. Charlie, starting lineup, pitching-wise, for the Tigers.
That's the question we keep getting. Who's going to be the Friday night guy? Who's going to be the Friday night guy? And it does change throughout the season. It's not locked in stone. But when you look at how Jake Johnson has kind of set this up, Mike, I think this is probably what a lot of people expected entering the season. Cade Anderson will be taking the ball on Friday against Purdue Fort Wayne for the first game for LSU baseball this season. Sophomore from Madisonville.
Yep.
He had a really solid freshman campaign with the Tigers. He was kind of more of their midweek guy, logged a bunch of innings for them early on. So he's going to be the Friday night guy to open the season. Saturday night guy is a new face, Anthony Ianson, who played with the U.S. Collegiate baseball team. And he was very highly touted out of UC San Diego, the number 4 ranked transfer in the portal, comes to LSU. He's going to be the Saturday guy for him, starting things off. And he was kind of the Saturday guy for UC San Diego as well. Maybe he's just kind of comfortable in that role. Chase Shores is the Sunday guy. And Mike, that's the name I've mentioned a couple times when we've talked about LSU baseball, that I'm really, really looking forward to seeing Chase Shores. He is Ben McDonald came on with this, as I mentioned last night. He talked about him. 6'8", right-handed pitcher that hits 99 on that fastball. He's got a great
low sinker. You can't miss him when he's on that mound.
And apparently, here's the best part about it. His control is apparently very solid early on. Now, the question marks with him, he's returning from Tommy John surgery. I think he went through it back in April of 2023.
Yep.
So he hasn't pitched in a long, long time. That's the one thing that's a little bit concerning about him. They might kind of ease him into things.
But he'll be on a pitch count.
Yeah, probably early on, and they'll ease him into.
I'm wondering if that's where the former Nicholls State pitcher may
come. Jacob Myers?
Yeah, because I think with Myers, he might have been told he'd be a starter, and he might be a midweek starter, but I think they were looking at him more as a middle reliever, and this is where Myers may have his shot here.
Myers is a really intriguing player, Mike, because he can fit in a bunch of different roles. I think Myers could be an awesome closer. Maybe they want Gavin Guidry to be that guy. Maybe they want Myers to be a starter at some point. He could do that, too. He showed that he could do that at Nichols. He was their ace for back-to-back years. So we'll see what he decides, what Jay Johnson ends up deciding to do with Jacob Myers. But that's the early kind of rotation right now to start things out. Cade Anderson, the sophomore, is going to be taking the ball on Friday. On Saturday, Anthony Ianson, the transfer from UC San Diego. And then on Sunday, probably the most volatile guy in this entire rotation, where he could be, you know, an ace by the end of the season, but give him some time because he is pitching for the first time in basically 2 years, in Chase Shores, who oozes with talent, as Ben Johnson said, and could be a potential first-round pick, is going to be getting the ball on Sunday, Mike. It's just a loaded rotation. I can't wait to see how it all shapes up.
Man, Hank Stram used to tell me this years ago. He said, Bayou, I never worry about having too much talent. I'm always worried about not having enough. Man, you look at LSU, they got talent, and it's at almost every spot.
A lot of new faces, but a lot of talent.
And how quickly that comes together. Not again, we'll have Coach Johnson on tomorrow at 5:20 with us. Also, Bobby J will join me from 4 to 5 tomorrow. Maybe I can hijack him from 5 to 6, and he can talk to Coach Johnson also. So we'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL. On with us, Saints radio analyst Deuce McAllister will join me right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long in studio. We'll go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, bring in the Saints radio color analyst, Deuce McAllister. Deuce, thanks so much for joining us. Deuce, it was made official yesterday. I know we've talked about it a number of times, but I'll get your thoughts now after kind of looking it over, well over a week now, on Kellen Moore as the new head coach of the Saints, and it'll be made official tomorrow at 11:30. And again, WWL will carry that press conference live right here on the Big 870. But I think everybody's interested in the staff, but it's because that's the next thing on the list, so to speak. So your thoughts on Kellen, and also what you think he might be looking for staff-wise?
Yeah, I think when you look at it overall, you know, probably the Saints are pleased to be able to get Kellen Moore. And, you know, I think from everything that you see from a player standpoint, I know they're excited, you know. And so the biggest thing for me now is, like you really said, from a staff component, who do you surround him with? You know, particularly being a first-time head coach, you want to make sure that he probably has one or two staffers on his staff. I know Coach Staley is one of those guys that's been mentioned, but you want to make sure that he has one or two staffers on his staff that have been head coaches prior. And so whether that's in the NFL, whether that's college, just to make sure from an administrative standpoint, you can help take some of that pressure off of him. And then it becomes, you know, OC, DC, what are their philosophies? I mean, because if you're going to have a complete roster change, then that obviously needs to come into effect. And, you know, getting him up to speed to what you've done at the Senior Bowl and even some of the other bowl games, you know, just getting him up to speed to that aspect. You have the combine coming up in a couple of weeks, so making sure that you're on the same page there. And then, you know, while all that is going on, you still have to be in talks of how you want to construct the players that you do have, you know, to make sure that you get cap compliant. And so they will have a couple of plans already. You know, let's just say this is plan A, this is plan B, this is plan C. This is how we can get create, let's just call it $12 million of funding after we get up under salary cap compliance. This is how we can create $7 million of cap compliance. You know, if we make these moves and have X amount of posts, you can only have two, but these are players that we can release post June 1st, but we have to get cap compliant before then this creates X amount of salary cap. All of those things have to be going on now, even though he doesn't have a staff, et cetera, or even really know your roster in detail. But all of those things are happening now.
Deuce, one of the things I know we live in that kind of world where we want instant success, but, you know, you look at this roster and you can see it's going to be some overhaul and a major retooling, not only from starters, from a depth standpoint, and not having a lot of money to spend in free agency. A lot of this is rebuilding wise. You're going to have to hit in the draft because I think that's going to be the key point for 2025. You might be able to get a couple of veteran guys that not going to cost you a lot of money, but I think the emphasis is, with so many picks now that you've been able to accumulate, and I'm all for more draft picks because I think that's where you get better. And it's, if you hit, it's football minimum wage. You're not paying them a lot of money at this stage of the game. That this is the start of it's just not a little shakeup on the roster. It's going to be a big shakeup on the roster.
Yeah, I agree with you. And some of that is from a production standpoint. Some of that is because of, salary cap. And, to say that they can't spend money, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think their vision has kind of changed as well, where they don't want to be doing the song and dance they've done the last, let's call it 5 or 6 years there. They want to kind of be in the middle of the road of where, hey, we can be aggressive, but we don't have to. And we are cap compliant, where if we want to go out there and we can do some things, they can do so. So, there's a couple different ways. I mean, I don't think that you have to completely bottom out this year just so you can say we are picking in the top five and we're playing a ton of young players. Because trust me, if a veteran guy sees that his market may not be what it wanted to be and he can sign a one-year kind of prove-it deal and you can be creative with that structure in that deal, then you'll be able to get some players. It may not be top-line players, but you'll be able to get some players in here that want to know that they got to play a lot. They want to be able to get back to the bargaining table to sign a better deal. You know, you'll have some of those opportunities.
Deuce, on Super Bowl Sunday, I know you got to be proud of A.J. Brown. Guy goes to Ole Miss, and they didn't want to pay him in Tennessee, and it got John Robinson fired there because I remember him telling me, Mike, I'm not paying no wide receiver over $20 million a year. And, well, that didn't go down too well because they're still trying to find a receiver that can play nearly as well as A.J. And, he was a big part of that attack. And you could tell him and Devontae, it's great to see from Mimid High School and to do what he's done throughout his career as a Heisman Trophy winner and, wins a national championship at Alabama and now a champion here in the National Football League. But A.J. Brown, I know you know him well, and your thoughts on A.J. and finally getting that elusive world title, so to speak.
Yeah, you're proud for him. I mean, it's a lot of work that you put into it, and to have that opportunity, like you said, kind of didn't work out for him in Tennessee, and he's found a home so far up in Philly, and just to be able to showcase what you can do. And here's the thing about it, you're still talking about a prospect that had flirted with baseball. I mean, he was a heck of a baseball player coming out of high school, and even in college, he flirted with the thought of it. But I think that he made the right decision, and so physical receiver, he's a competitor. Kind of has to try to, control the emotions at times. A lot of people think that he's angry, but he's really a really good kid, and you're proud and happy for him. Well deserved. And so, AJ, I know he'll be showcasing one that smile, and then he's going to be showcasing the new hard word that he gets. But, not only that, having relationships with a couple other guys. I know Ron Walker, his Yazoo buddy, has won another championship running back over there. And you're talking about a kid that played up in Memphis, not even an SEC, and Gainwell. And, just hey, you know, that's what it's about. Even Saints fans, I know at times we're upset. You look at Chauncey getting one, and you look at Zach getting one, and Book gets one as well. And so Vic Fangio gets his first ring, and, you know, he's been coaching for a long, long time. And, you know, that organization, they've hit on draft picks. They have some high offensive guys that they're playing really well, but defensively they were able to hit on some pieces, and, you know, they end up being world champions.
Deuce, I was telling Charlie this, man, Vic Fangio, when he first came here, you know, Vic's not a real big guy. And when he was coaching here with the Saints the first time under Moore, if he was 165 pounds, he was plenty. I mean, he was a real thin dude. Charlie finally got to see a picture of him when he was with the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, it was 1996, dude.
And I told him, man, Charlie, he's heavy now. You know, he was probably 175, 180. Now, he's a little bit more now than he was back then. But, man, you feel, you know, so great for Vic because you think about it. He won in the USFL. He wins a title there. And how long that's been till he wins an NFL championship. Look all the places he's been. He's almost been, you know, like a military guy. They moved him all around. He's went from place to place. They didn't like the fact that, you know, he might have been a hard line coach with him in Miami. They didn't care for that. So he goes to Philly, and he, you know, he helps in a big part of bringing them a world title.
Yeah, a huge part of it. And I think, you know, when you can most players want to be coached. Most players want to be coached. You know, if I'm doing something right, then yes, you can congratulate me, but how can you get me better? That's the challenge that coaches have to be able to connect with players. And so, you know, that'll be a challenge for Coach Moore as well. How can I motivate guys? Some guys are motivated by money, but most guys are motivated by this coach is getting me better. This coach is challenging me, not only mentally, but from a physical aspect. And, you know, I think that's what Vic was able to do, to get the most out of what he had from a talent standpoint, and then to find a scheme that really worked for him. And so you're always probably revert back to who you are as a play caller. But if that scheme, you know, isn't necessarily what my team does well, why am I continuing to run this? Why am I doing this? You know, I thought it was to be successful. It's not about to say, oh, I had the number one defense. Oh, I had the number one offense. But we struggled in X, you know, category. You're hurting the players more so than you're hurting yourself.
Deuce, I've never seen this before. Maybe you have on a Super Bowl champ. They ran the football more than any other team in pro football, and they threw the least amount of passes. They were 1-32. I can't remember another NFL team who wins a Super Bowl and is 1-32. Basically, 1 in rushing and 32 in attempts, passing-wise.
You know where I probably have to go back to? And we would be going back some decades or at least some years. It would probably have to be Shanahan's team with Elway and Terrell Davis.
Okay.
I mean, I think about that. And that was just because they ran that zone so well, that outside zone so well. But, I mean, you still had Sharp out there and you still had McCaffrey. So I don't know if they were number 32 because they could throw it, but they were a running football team. And so that's the type of team that you would have to go back. And I'm talking, we're talking about years.
That's,
I mean, we're not talking about in the last 5 to 10 years. We're talking about almost 30 years, if not longer.
Deuce, before we let you run, I want to get your thoughts on Kellen's just resume as a 36-year-old, because we've had people call in and say, oh, he's too young, he's not ready to be a head coach. We spoke with Babe Laufenberg, the color analyst for the Cowboys, a couple weeks back, and Babe made a great point. He basically said at some point every coach is a first-time head coach in the NFL, and with Kellen Moore, I know that he's a young guy, he's the youngest head coach in the NFL now, but the 6 years that he spent as an offensive coordinator, he found a ton of success. CBS Sports has a great stat that when he was with the Cowboys from 2019 through 2022 as the OC there, they were number 2 in both yards and points per game, only behind the Chiefs. And then he spent 2023 with the Chargers and that miserable 5-12 campaign that got Brandon Staley fired. But then 2024, he wins a Super Bowl with the Eagles. So your thoughts on his resume as a young first-time head coach?
Well, there will be things that he kind of adjusts to being a head coach. I mean, it will be his choice. It will have to be a situation where he has a few people that he leans on as far as some of the decisions that he makes, some of the things that he wants to do and how he sees fit for that team. And that's why I think surrounding him with a veteran staff will be critical for him. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it'll be his call. He's been around football long enough, whether you're talking about college, NFL, as well as pros. He's been with different organizations enough to know how he wants to do things, what he feels works for his team. And then having veteran players to be able to lean on, I think, will be important for him as well. And so get him what he needs from a staffing standpoint and then from a player standpoint. It won't be solved, like Mike talked about. It won't all be solved in year one. But at the same time, I don't think that the Saints are looking for, hey, you have to make the playoffs in the next 2 years, and if you don't, you're going to be on the hot seat. I don't think that this is that type of situation.
Deuce, thanks so much for joining us. I know we'll be talking again real soon. But, again, I told this to Hebert. He said, Mike, I agree with you. We're going to have a more eventful offseason than in season.
Oh, I agree. I mean, a lot of things will happen over the next, let's call it 6 weeks, because, hey, they kind of have to.
Absolutely. I agree. Thank you, Deuce. Appreciate it, bud.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
All righty. Deuce McAllister, Saints radio color analyst. Thank him for his time and insights on the Saints and Kellen Moore. When we come back, Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, also covers the Tennessee Titans, will join us. Some draft talk also about what the Titans might do with the first overall pick, what the Saints might do at 9. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line. He covers the NFL draft for the Draft Network, also covers the Tennessee Titans, Justin Mello. Justin, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. And I thought about you yesterday with the season over with, man, this is sort of our time of the year, draft, free agency, where everything starts to heat up with you kind of right in the middle of it covering the Titans. They hold all the cards. And the way I look at it, Travis Hunter is one for me, Abdul Carter is two, and there's a gap after that. But if you convince that Cam Ward is your quarterback, then that's where you got to go. One thing I learned from Bobby Hebert, when working with him all of his years, he said, Mike, I'm going to tell you something. Quarterback trumps every other position out on the field. And he's right about that. But you got to be sure this draft is not, say, loaded with a absolute guy at that quarterback spot. So one, I'll ask you your thoughts on if the Titans keep the pick. To me, it would have to be at quarterback with Ward, but I think there's a more likely scenario that they try to deal down and get extra selections.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, this is essentially a new regime. General manager Mike Borgonzi in his first year, president of football operations Chad Brinker in his second year, but his first as the de facto decision maker, if you will. Certainly a collaborative effort between him and the general manager that he hired. Now, they're essentially inheriting a second-year head coach in Brian Callahan, who's going to have some input, but I don't think anyone truly believes he's going to have any final say on this. Surely he'd be interested in having a quarterback. He's an offensive-minded guy. Just went 3-14 in his first year with terrible quarterback play from Will Levis and Mason Rudolph. He knows he's entering the year on the hot seat, and he needs a quarterback to help him win football games. Now, I believe the Titans have five options on the table, which is really crazy to say when you're talking about the number one overall pick, but that's how unpredictable this draft is, if you will. They can take one of the two quarterbacks, which of course is Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders. They could stay there and take Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter, or they could deal the pick and maybe hope that they stay within striking distance of Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter. Maybe say number three overall with the Giants, who may certainly have interest in coming up for a quarterback. So it's a very unpredictable draft. If they're going quarterback, it means they're sold on one of those two. But I agree. I think it's likelier they try to deal this pick and play the patient game when it comes to a franchise quarterback.
Justin, a lot of talk that because he has a residence there, that Aaron Rodgers' next destination may well be the Tennessee Titans. Give us your opinion on that. I don't know how that would go down. Aaron can still play, but, you know, he's not an elite guy anymore. And, boy, that you also got to deal with the storm around him, too.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'll put my hand up and say I share, you know, your same opinion, and I don't know that it's kind of worth the mess at this point. But I'll also say that I could see it happening. You know, I think that Brian Callahan and him would get along very well. You know, Brian Callahan's a very traditional offensive-minded guy. What went so wrong between him and Will Levis this past season is that Callahan's offense demands and even craves a quarterback that throws the football with anticipation and operates an offense with rhythm and timing. That is not Will Levis. He wants the deep developing play action stuff. And Brian Callahan wanted the quick hitters, you know, under center, quick hitters. You kind of know where you're going with the ball. It's been designed for it. And that's Aaron Rodgers. Certainly at this point, you know, certainly we remember him for the off-script magic, but there's no doubt, and I've heard this term thrown around a lot lately. It gives me a chuckle. Aaron Rodgers is very quarterbacky, right? It's anticipation. It's rhythm. It's timing. It's accurate. That's what Brian Callahan wants. And don't forget, now it depends what he thinks of them. It doesn't guarantee they get along. People often forget that part of the evaluation. But their president of football operations, Chad Brinker, he was in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers for about 10 to 15 years. Mm. So there are a lot of ties there, tying this organization to Aaron Rodgers right now. And if they like one of these quarterbacks at number one overall, that means they're going to get a veteran bridge guy. They are not running this back with Will Levis. They cannot sell that to the fan base. No one's showing up if it's Will Levis under center week one. If it's a veteran bridge guy, aren't a lot of options. Aaron Rodgers might sit near the top of their list.
Man, God bless Brian, because I don't know if he's going to survive this. I'll be honest with you, Justin. Will Campbell from LSU, because I think they're going to vie along with Armando from Missouri as the top linemen. And I think both of them start at the tackle position, to be honest with you. Will's got a bit of a funky stance, and they're going to have to do something with that particular deal. But I'll get your opinion on Will Campbell. And I think both him and Mimble will both go in the top 12 picks in this draft, because, you know, I think what the Eagles showed, you got to win up front, offensive, defensive line. There is a ton of defensive linemen in this draft class. Out of my top 75, 24 are defensive linemen. But your thoughts on Will Campbell, and kind of he's vying against Armando there for to be the top offensive lineman off the board.
Yeah, first of all, you're on the right track. I'm not surprised you are, but that's about the right number of D linemen to have in this top 75. It's loaded at that spot. You know, with Will, I struggle with the evaluation a little bit. The stance is very funky, as you said. That's going to need some work. I don't think he plays the position with terrific length. You know, coming into this year, this past college football season, a lot of people had kind of anointed him as, you know, him and Kelvin Banks, they're the best tackles in football. I don't really think either of them lived up to that billing this past season. And me personally, could I see him being a tackle? I can, but I like the projection better at guard, in all honesty. Reminds me a little bit about, you know, Peter Skoronski a couple of years ago coming out of Northwestern, where he only played tackle in college. You know, Campbell's not quite as short as he is in terms of the arm length, but they kicked Peter inside, and he's been pretty good at guard. I think for Will Campbell to hit his ceiling, something similar would have to happen. Now, I'm thrilled you bring up the Missouri kid, because, you know, this tackle class, it's almost like the quarterbacks, right? Like, where we don't know for sure what's going to happen at the top. I think there's a shot the Missouri kid's the best tackle in the class, and I think he could be the first one. And I'll tell you, if I'm the New Orleans Saints, you know, picking there at nine, I'd run that card in zero hesitation. I know they took a tackle in the first last year, but they've kind of needed to be revamping that room, and they need another one, you know, starting up front. For me, Embo, he's a phenomenal prospect. I think he just turned 20 years old, too. Like, the sky's the limit for that kid. There's a chance he's the best tackle in this class.
Justin, you and I on the same wavelength on that. I think he's the one guy, offensive line-wise, is going to make that run. And I think you'll have a lot of people looking at him as a top 10 pick. And right, 20 years old, right tackle. The Saints have a left tackle. Taliase Fuaga, they got one at left. Now you need one at the right tackle. And this draft class is full of defensive linemen. Charlie?
Yeah, real quick on Armand Membu. I mean, Mike and I talked about this as well, Justin. Just look at his tape against Nick Skaraton from Texas A&M, which I know that he maybe didn't live up to expectations preseason-wise, but
man, Nick.
Man Boo just like took him to the woodshed.
He beat him up. He beat him up.
That was as impressive as film you'll see on a tackle in this class. So I like Man Boo a lot. I agree with both of you. I think he's going to end up being a top 15, if not even top 10 pick. But Justin, looking at this draft class as a whole, it feels like there's kind of those top three guys when you look at Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter and Mason Graham, and all of them are going to be gone by five. Those are like the top blue chip prospects in this class. But I feel like there's still a decent amount of players that could be there for the Saints at pick 9. I don't think this is a trade-up spot for them. If anything, it could be a trade-down spot. But when you're a Saints team that has so many different needs, just top to bottom, offense and defense, this has got to be a best player available spot, right?
Other thing, yeah, too, Justin, I'll throw in what Charlie brings up also. Tyler Warren got to be thrown in here.
I like him a lot.
The tight end from Penn State. I think if they look at someone other than offensive defensive lineman, that guy would be Tyler Warren.
I think there are a couple guys and a couple different directions they could go in. I like what you said. You know, when you've got as many holes as you do, I think you're comfortable kind of letting the board fall to you and making the best decision. I mean, I love the Tyler Warren shout out. The guy is elite, right? I mean, he's an elite route runner. The ball skills are outstanding. A tough cover one-on-one. Safeties and linebackers just cannot match him stride for stride. And then he's great after the catch as well. So he's an all-around player. Really excited about him. And, you know, in a class that's not seen as a high-end, you know, not one of the higher-end draft classes, you have a bit of an easier time selling yourself on a tight end at 9, right? Because you just say, just go get a great football player, right? That's first and foremost. Now, a couple of the other guys, again, because of the holes, I think Jalen Walker, the front seven, Georgia, might be the second best edge rusher in this class. I know it's a bit of a projection play, some off ball, but he's athletic. He's got great instincts. You've seen, you know, the Texas game. Well, I think he had 3 sacks in that one. You saw some of the pure upside as a rusher. I look at Ted McMillan at wide receiver, you know, offensive minded head coach here in Kellen Moore, a very different player than Chris Olave. So I think you like the idea of pairing them together. Look, you almost look at like a Drake London type of skill set, if you will. But I think he's even more explosive off the line of scrimmage than Drake is. He creates separation. He's elite at the catch point, towering size, really just go up there and go get it. So between a guy like Jalen Walker, a Tyler Warren, a Ted McMillan, the top tackle that we just talked about, whoever that it may end up being, I think the Saints will have a lot of options there at number 9.
Justin, I wish they had one more option, and that's Mason Graham.
He's not going to be
but
there.
But he ain't going to be there. Man, I would wish that.
Justin,
that's the guy.
I think that Mason Graham to Jacksonville is the easiest projection of this entire draft.
If he's still there.
You remember the Magic Johnson meme? I'm not going to be there. I don't think Mason Graham's going to be there at number 9. I'll tell you what. Everyone's talking about Jacksonville at number 5. People are forgetting. Like the New England Patriots at 4. If the top three go how we think they will, maybe one quarterback and you get Carter and Hunter, I don't know why we're not mocking Mason Graham to the Patriots. He'll be the best remaining player in the draft. I don't, you know, everyone wants to force an offensive lineman there. They certainly need one. I don't think there's one worth taking at number 4. I don't think they're going to force it. And then you look at who the head coach is, Mike Vrabel, a defensive-minded guy who made a lot of money with a dominant 3-tech in Tennessee with Jeffrey Simmons. Like, Mason Graham is going to be his type of player, and he's going to be the best player on the board. So I don't think he gets past the Patriots at 4, and if he does, Jacksonville runs the card in at number 5.
I agree with you. I think he goes to New England. I think that's man, I'd love to see the Saints try to make a move, but that's not going to happen. Justin, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always great insights, and enjoy having you on the show with us.
Thanks, Justin.
Pleasure's all mine. You gentlemen know where to find me.
All righty. Thank you. That was Justin Mello. He covers the NFL for the Draft Network. Also covers Tennessee Titans, so we'll keep in touch with him on exactly what's going to happen with that first overall pick in the draft. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number 1 of Sports Talk.